Howdy, howdy do, Who fans, and welcome to the Big Blue Box Podcast. My name's Gary.
My name's Adam.
And welcome to episode 246.
Yeah. One day, I shall come back. Yes, I shall come back. Until then, there must be no regrets, no tears, no anxieties. Just go forward in all your beliefs and prove to me that I am not mistaken in mine.
Our lives are different to anybody else's. That's the exciting thing. Nobody in the universe can do what we're doing.
I've reversed the polarity of the neutron flow, so the TARDIS should be free of the force field now.
You may be a doctor, but I'm the doctor. The definite article, you might say.
But the trouble with time travel is, one never seems to find the time.
Change, my dear. And it seems not a moment too soon.
Unlimited rice pudding, etc., etc.
I am the doctor!
For now, for this moment, I am the doctor again.
The ground beneath our feet is spinning at 1,000 miles an hour. And the entire planet is hurtling around the sun at 67,000 miles an hour. And I can feel it. We're falling through space, you and me.
People assume that time is a strict progression of cause to effect. But actually, from a non-linear, non-subjective viewpoint, it's more like a big ball of wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey stuff.
I could be a curator. I'd be great at curating. I'd be the great curator.
I could retire and do that.
I'm the doctor. I've lived for over 2,000 years, and not all of them were good. I've made many mistakes, and it's about time that I did something about that.
Bit of adrenaline, dash of outrage, and a hint of panic knitted my brain back together. I know exactly who I am. I'm the Doctor. Sorting out fair play throughout the universe.
Hello there, Doctor Who fans. Hope you've all had a cracking week and that you've all managed to do something.
Something.
Doctor Who related.
Related, yes.
Indeedy, in the week where we've seen some kind of Doctor Who, lots of rumours and Chinese whispers on social media for Doctor Who.
Yeah.
It's been one of those weird weeks where somebody starts something on Twitter. It's like, oh, there's something coming, there's an announcement or whatever. And then somebody grabs that, runs with it, adds a little bit onto it. Someone else picks it up, adds a little bit more. And before you know it, you've got the entire synopsis for Series 12 being announced.
That very all same on day. IMDb.
Yeah. But it turns out we just had another little teasery thing. So I think it was about 2, maybe 3 weeks ago, maybe not that long, on Instagram and Twitter. I think the official channel put the image out that we spoke about on last week's show with the big shadow of Jodie Whittaker coming out of the TARDIS with the weird perspective and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Just said, watch this space. And then we had a little video teaser trailer thingy. Not a trailer, a little teaser, didn't we?
Yeah, the TARDIS. It was sort of CGI. It almost looked cartoon, didn't it? Like a TARDIS just spinning. And what did it say? Watch
this space again. Yeah.
Was it? I thought it was something else. Time or... It's nearly time. I don't know. I remember there was something, yeah. Basically saying something is coming or I don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so still nothing to report or to go through. We have got a small something to talk about in the news, which come on to. But yeah, so in terms of news, we've got a very, very, very cool piece of news involving the legend that is Terence Dix. We'll go through that as well.
Yeah, really
some
good news.
Lovely pieces of merch. And then we're on to our review of Torchwood, the episode Captain Jack Harkness. Before we get stuck into all of that, remember to subscribe to our show on whatever podcast network you listen to podcasts on. Just do a search for the Big Blue Box Podcast. Give us a sub on there so you don't miss a show when that lands every Friday. You can also find us over on the website, www.bigblueboxpodcast.co.uk. You can listen to all of our shows over there. And we're on the socials as well. So just do a search again for the Big Blue Box Podcast, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. You can find us on there and have a chat. What have you been up to, buddy? Anything interesting Doctor Who-wise?
It's been quite a quick week for me, actually. It's flown by this week. Just quickly going back to what you're saying about that little teaser, that TARDIS teaser. So it didn't say it in the teaser itself, but underneath the video, the BBC have put, watch out, for the 23rd of November, didn't they? So we assume something is coming on the 23rd of November. I'm not expecting a full trailer. I don't know about you. I'm just thinking it's going to be a little teaser or something like, remember when we got the ceiling shattering above the Doctor? I think it's going to be something like that. I'm not expecting a full teaser. Yeah, I mean, it'd be great if we do. It'd be great if we get a full trailer. Sorry, not teaser. It'd be great if we get a full trailer. But I'm just expecting it to be a tiny teaser on the 23rd, I would think. So, yeah, we still don't know when the Series 12 is going to start airing. So I doubt it'll be a full trailer. But something's going to happen on the 23rd.
Yeah, so I'm watching the trailer now. And as the TARDIS spins across the screen, it reveals the words, "Watch this space."
That's it.
And then the Doctor Who logo comes in. Very nice. And then the description of the video just says, "Make space." And then it says 23/11/19. So that's
Doctor Who's birthday, a very appropriate date.
A big one. Was it 54 or 56 years?
Oh,
one of the two.
It must be getting on a bit, actually. Yeah, because if you think the 50th seems like ages ago now. God, I loved the build up to the 50th, didn't you? That was an amazing time. That was all that amazing trailer we got of all the Doctors spinning. What a time to be alive. But so yeah, something's going to happen on the 23rd. We'll wait and see. I obviously, after our big seven-parter the other week of the Ambassadors of Death, after getting that watched, really enjoyed that, actually. And that story stayed with me a little bit as well. I don't know about you. Mm-hmm. I'm still thinking about it, even this morning, just thinking how much I enjoyed that one. The only other thing I've done, really, is I managed to watch this new independent spin-off starring Nabil Shaban as Syl, you know, the return of Syl.
I'm not doing it.
Go on, do it. Because I can't do it. You have to do it.
That's the only time I do it.
There is a certain scene in that spin-off that just reminds me of, and it's a very naughty scene, and I don't know if I can hear that gargle in the same way ever again. Anyone who's seen it will know exactly what I mean. So this has been floating around for a while. I think a few people listening will know what I'm talking about. It's called Syl and the Devil Seeds of Arador, I think is the proper title. And I wasn't sure what to expect because, you know, there's been a few of these sort of independent spin-offs over the years, and some of them are better than others. I don't think there's been a new one produced for a while. I think most of the ones that come out recently were ones that were made in the 90s or early 2000s maybe, and they, you know, remastered them and put them out and stuff. What was that? There was one about the Devil's End, wasn't there? Return to Devil's End.
The Daemons sequel kind of thing, wasn't it?
Demons Rising or something like that. So there's been quite a few. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure what this would be like. And I've got to tell you, I really, really enjoyed this one. It's got a very limited budget. You know, these are independent productions, so don't go into it expecting anything amazing. But it was a hell of a lot of fun. And mainly down to Nabil Shaban, who had me in stitches as Syl. It was as if he'd sort of got this script and thought, right, I've finally got, you know, because he was great in Vengeance and also in Mind Warp. I mean, they're not stories I particularly like, but he's great in them. He's really taken the reins with this one. You can tell he's having an absolute blast being back in the Syl suit. And Christopher Ryan comes back as Kiv, but not in the same form, and that's all I'm going to say. Sophie Aldred's in it. She's part of that very naughty scene, which I mentioned. I still haven't quite got over it, I've got to tell you.
She's dressed up in makeup, isn't she?
She's playing another character. Yeah, Madame Mar, I think that's it is, right. Something like that. Mm-hmm. She's playing it. Yeah, she's not playing Ace.
Ace!
But she's had a bit of a... Her and Syl have had a bit of a thing in the past, it would appear, her and this character. So they sort of rekindle that relationship briefly.
Bloody hell.
But it's a lot of fun. As I said, I've seen some great reviews of it. I know we've got a review on our website because who was it who got the preview copy?
Yeah, Mark Donaldson, one of our writers.
Donaldson, yep. He got the preview copy of it and he gave it a very good review. In fact, a very, very fair review, because some of the reviews I've seen, they've been a bit cruel about like the makeup and stuff like that. But it is an independent production, you know. They've done, you can tell a lot of love's gone into it. I was actually quite impressed with the CGI in it for an independent. I thought it looked really decent. But anyway, so I watched that over the weekend and that was just a real... bit of fun. I just really enjoyed it. I found myself laughing a hell of a lot, and the build was just amazing.
There's a particular promotional image that a lot of people use in their reviews and stuff. Mark used it for us on his article on our website, and it's really, when you know, because I didn't know this scene was in there, but after you explain this particular scene between one of the promotional images is Syl sitting there and Sophie Aldred standing next to him with her hand on him, but just the look on his face, it literally says it all. You don't even have to watch the thing to know what's just happened or what's about to happen.
It should be an 18 certificate. I'll tell you what, one thing I will say in a serious note is that Nabil's performance is hilarious. He's really funny in it. But one thing that did really impress me is it's a bit like watching a sort of play in a way, because obviously, you know, the way it's filmed and everything, and as I said, the budget, and it's very sort of wordy and scripted, but I wasn't bored by it at all. I wasn't sort of thinking, oh, you know, this is a bit of a slog. Or it does sort of go along at a nice pace. But one thing I was really, really struck by is there are a couple of scenes when Nabil has to deliver a really long monologue or speech. Mm-hmm. And as someone who sort of does YouTube, and you do it with the podcast, sometimes even when you rehearse something 100 times, it's really hard to get your words out. It's as if your brain just keeps tripping you up. And he manages to do this scene. I think it's at the episode three. It's a four-parter. And it's about 5 minutes of him just talking to camera, and it is all in one take because of the production side of things. A lot of them are just single shots, you know, there's not a lot of sort of edits or chops or changes. And I was really just impressed, thinking, wow, I know how difficult that is to actually just flow the words the way he does. So I've got to say, my whole thing about when I finished watching it was what a amazing performance from him in it. I think for me, that was just the absolute highlight. Just that, how he just, like I said, got the script, grabbed it, and went with it. I really want to meet him again now. I met him years ago, years and years and years ago, back in the good old days of Collectomania at Milton Keynes. I remember meeting him there. I'm going back a long time, actually. I've got a really cool picture somewhere signed by him, a Syl picture. But I, after watching that, I was thinking, oh, I really want to meet him again. And you know, get a picture with him, because I haven't got a picture with him.
was it just the letters ILIL repeated over and over and over again?
Yeah, blah, blah, blah. I can't do it. So frustrated. So that's for me. I really haven't had a chance to do anything else. I had a couple of 13th Doctor Funko Pops drop through the letterbox, which I know you were disgusted by. You're not a fan. So there's three new ones out. There's that Dalek, that funny Dalek for Resolution. There's a Kablam Man. I think the Kablam Man Kablam I actually Man. Really, really like. I do. Did you not even like the Kablam Man?
No.
Honestly?
The Kablam, come on.
Yeah, I know. Well, I wasn't a big fan of that. But and then there's the 30th Doctor in goggles. But yeah, I saw your little post underneath my picture. I could tell you weren't going to get them.
I'm being slightly hypocritical. I did post an image of my Captain Jack Funko Pop this morning.
Well, he's cool.
He is cool.
He's a good one, yeah.
Mm. It's just Funko Pops, mate. You know my view on them these days.
I do. Yeah.
The world's just going to be, there's going to be a pile of them the size of Everest in about 50 years' time. And that's going to be the problem with global warming.
I do worry that there are so many millions of them out there. I actually, considering the whole thing about plastic, you know, that we're so aware of, you know, plastic and the use of it these days, I do, this is a genuine concern, worry about how many Funko Pops are out there. Whenever I go abroad or wherever I go, I will always search out a sci-fi shop. Doesn't matter where I am, I will try and find a little funky store to visit. And I can guarantee you the last three or four times I've been abroad and I found one, I walk in and they're wall-to-wall Funko Pops. It doesn't matter what part of the world I'm in, there they are, stacked up in their millions. I just don't know what's going to happen to all these Funko Pops in years to come. It's literally floating down the Thames with like thousands of them.
Yeah, and they get sent in plastic packaging as well.
They are not, not very environmentally friendly, are they?
Like the people at Funko Pop, I know I've spoken to them, a couple of guys who work there over the years, you know, nice enough people and everything. And don't get me wrong, in terms of a business model, they've absolutely nailed it over the past few years. They're very, very popular. But
yeah,
I liked them back in the day when you had not so many of them knocking around. So when you picked up a Funko Pop, it was like, yeah, I've got a really cool little thing here. But nowadays, when you buy one, you know that, you know, several billion other people have got the same one. I mean, it's cool, you know. It's all good. I'm not bashing them too hard, but yeah, they've lost their appeal a little bit for me.
I know what you mean. I'm just laughing because I've got hundreds of the blimmin' things. I remember, like, at one point, I had them all stacked up on the unit next to the bed. I think if you watch some of my videos from about a year ago or maybe more, you'll just see, because I used to always film myself in front of them. And they're just, just get higher and higher every video. Like, they're not there anymore. I've replaced them with, I've replaced them with the season Blu-ray sets. I've really scaled it down. But yeah, I've got hundreds of blimmin' things. You open a cupboard and they literally all fall out. Because I've got nowhere to display them, obviously.
Obviously. You need to put some shelves up, mate.
Yeah.
I've got a few. Yeah. I've got some decent Who ones left. I might sell them, actually.
You've got a couple of really rare ones. Gary was gonna give me, I forget which one it is. It might be the 12th Doctor in spacesuit. He said, "Oh, do you want it?" And I was thinking, "Yeah, I'll have it." And I thought, I'm pretty sure that's quite rare. So I messaged my mate who's really into them, like really into buying and selling them, knows the problem. And he was like, "God, that's like sometimes goes for like £200 or £300 on eBay." I'm like, "Are you sure?" So I thought, shall I tell Gary or shall I just have it? No, I couldn't live with myself. I thought, no, I better tell him because I won't be able to look at it. I won't, you know, I couldn't sell it. Well, like, where's that Funko Pop I gave you? Oh, it's here somewhere, sold on eBay, £500. But yeah, I'm pretty sure you've got at least one, if not more, very nice little collectible ones from that Doctor Who range, because some of them were hard to get.
They were, yes.
Yeah.
So if anyone listening wants... is after some Funko Pops and you haven't completed your collection, you're after a couple of rare ones, just let me know and we'll work out a fair price.
Because
I'd happily get rid of them, all of them, or I'll just burn them.
No. You can get rid of all of them, would you?
Yeah.
There must be one you like, you want to keep.
The Hartnell one's quite cute.
Oh yeah, don't get rid of Hartnell.
And the other version I've got of the Tom Baker holding out his hand with the jelly babies, that's quite
cute. That's a good one. What other ones you got? He's looking at them. You can't see listeners, but he's looking across onto his shelf.
I like
you can't see many of them through all the Star Wars stuff, but he's
going. Yeah, I like the Dalek one. There's a Dalek one where the case is coming apart and you can see the actual Dalek inside. That's quite a cool one.
Oh, that is a good one, yeah.
Yeah.
Forgot about that.
I like my little Cyberman one. He's not a chase, he's just a standard one. And I like my 10th Doctor in his 9th Doctor outfit.
That's quite
a cool one, yeah.
Have you got the blue suit one where he's holding the hand in the jar? Have you got that one?
Yes.
That's a nice one.
Yeah.
See, you do like them more than you thought.
I'll still get rid of them.
I know you will.
Anyone that wants them, just let me know.
Yeah. Haven't you got a 10th Doctor suit somewhere? Or is it just a suit that slightly resembles the 10th Doctor?
No, I had a suit that, yeah, it was a similar colour.
Yeah.
So from a distance with the right lighting, it looked like the suit. It didn't have the blue pinstripes though. Yeah. What were we saying? Stuff. What have we been doing? Yes. So along with watching this week's Torchwood, obviously, I did go back and watch some Third Doctor. So a lot of people referenced Inferno when they were talking about the Ambassadors of Death in their thoughts. So I stuck Inferno on. That's one I do reach for quite regularly with a Third Doctor. But
yeah,
it's been a fair while, I suppose, since I last watched that. So that was awesome going from Ambassadors to that one. Because you appreciate the little weirdness that we experience with the Ambassadors of Death, where the Doctor just happens to have the TARDIS console in a warehouse somewhere, whatever. But he does say in Inferno that something's wrong with it, essentially. And so he's taken it out of the TARDIS so he can repair it and get it fixed and work on it and stuff. So,
okay, fair enough.
Something's up with the old girl, apparently. So he's,
If there's any doctor I can imagine just rolling that out through the TARDIS doors, it's Pertwee. Yeah. Right, come on, let's get this console out of here. Let's have a look at it.
Yeah. So that was cool. That was cool watching Inferno.
Yeah.
And I've also kept my eye on the reviews for the recent Doctor Who video game, the VR game, The Edge of Time, that was released.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yesterday, I think. So there's been some reviews out already for that. Apparently, it's really good.
It's a cracking trailer. Yeah, yes. It's in the trailer for, I have to say, I watched it last night or night before. Really good trailer for that.
Very good, yeah. Mm. So there's a really good review over on the Time Ladies website, thetimeladies.com. I think Beth has done a decent write-up. Really, really cool. Just seems like a really good way to experience the world of Doctor Who, you know. There's one thing having, I think one of the best, actually, one of the best video games that I played of Doctor Who wasn't a Doctor Who game on its own. It was part of the Lego. So Lego brought out a video game series a few years ago called Dimensions.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they released a whole raft of Doctor Who packs for it. And essentially they end up adding every single Doctor into the game. Mm. And you could change into every Doctor, and every TARDIS was in there, and it was very, very cool. So I think that's the best all-round Doctor Who game I've played over the years. But this one does look very cool. Like, they've nailed the experience, everything. It really feels like you're in the world of Doctor Who. It's a bit Sonic-y, I would say, but kind of limited anyway.
Yeah, Sonic theme wafted around, yeah.
But no, it looks quite cool. Yeah, it does look pretty good. Yeah.
TARDIS, there's a shot where it sort of spins around the TARDIS as it lands in the middle. I liked the look of that. Yeah, I'll give it a go. I'm rubbish at games. I have such a low sort of boredom threshold. I get bored with games so quickly. As soon as I get stuck on something, I'm like, right, I'm done. I'm not a big game person, but I am intrigued by it. And I said, an awesome trailer. So, and I guess this is more, you kind of, with that sort of game, you step into it, don't you? Rather than sitting there playing it. The whole thing is that you're part of it, I suppose. So it'd be a bit more interesting. I'll give it a go.
Yes.
If it's not too expensive.
It's probably priced around the same as any other. I don't know 100%, but it's probably.
Is it a download thing, or is it a physical? Can you go out and buy this anywhere? Or is it a download thingy? Because again, I'm not very, you can tell how technical I am, not very good with these. Like, my partner's always downloading games and instead of buying them, and I don't know.
I believe, and I don't know 100%, and I'm presuming that you can head over to, like, you know, the PlayStation store or...
And it's there. You
know, whatever, it should be there.
Mm, I'll have a look.
Or Steam, the Steam store, whatever. It should be there. Mm. So that's what I've been up to. Ain't nothing too crazy.
No, nothing too wild.
Yep, trying to figure out ways to creatively get rid of Funko Pops, obviously.
Oh, I'll tell you what I was going to ask you. I meant to ask you this right at the start, and I've only just remembered it. You were talking about the 23rd and trailers and teasers. Did I see that we are actually going to get something on Children in Need, Doctor Who related? Has that actually been confirmed?
I don't know.
I think it has. Probably. I'm sure. Now, sometimes I dream these things and I think they're real. I have a feeling we're getting something on Children in Need, Doctor Who related. But as they've made this big thing about it being the 23rd, which is after Children in Need, my gut feeling is it'll probably be Jodie singing Yellow or so. It probably might not be a clip or a teaser. It'll probably be something to do with Jodie, I reckon, because she's involved in the Children in Need album that's come out, isn't she? So I reckon she's going to be on there singing with Coldplay or something. Wouldn't be at all surprised.
Yeah, that sounds something that they would do.
Yeah, so yeah. I don't know, but we might get something on Children in Need, which I believe is Friday.
Is it this Friday, isn't it?
I believe it is, yeah, which will be the day this podcast comes out, yeah. Mm. So possibly we'll be getting something, but I don't know. Who knows? It's all so hush-hush. It's Chinese whispers.
We've had some cracking Children in Need things over the years.
Time Crash. Pete Davidson, now that was absolutely awesome.
Yeah, didn't we have the Rowan Atkinson as the Doctor 1 year? That was funny.
Oh, that was Red Nose Day. That
Quite relief.
Oh gosh, I forgot all about that.
That was awesome. That was so funny.
That was funny. He is I really like him. In terms of, I just find him funny. Even though he's not particularly the funniest person in real life. And he'll admit that himself. He's a bit of a grumpy old so-and-so in real life, Ronax. And I've met him and served him. And but he, as characters, I find him hilarious. And he was brilliant in that. Yeah. Joanna Lumley as well, wouldn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. See?
Old Rowan Atkinson. Imagine him as the Doctor.
Well,
as a future. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Come on, Baldrick. let's land the TARDIS, shall we?
Let's see what news we got.
Talking of stuff coming up, we have been, so there was some rumours, we're recording this on the 13th of November, Wednesday. There was some, as Adam just said, you know, Chinese whispers and stuff. There was that kind of thing floating around on social media this morning around an announcement that was going to go out at 8 p.m. today on the 13th. And somebody who is pretty close to the show, one of our good friends, I'm not going to say who, has sent us the information on this, so we can freely talk about it, because by the time you guys listen to this show, that embargo would have been lifted anyway. So it's not a huge announcement in terms of things that you'll actually see in the show or anything like that. This is more behind the scenes stuff, but they have announced that they're going to have three new directors and some new writers jump on board for series 12. And just a little bit of blurb that's come through from the BBC. It says, with the 13th Doctor, played by Jodie Whittaker, and her friends well on their way to landing back on our screens, the next series is set to welcome an exciting host of new directors and both new and returning writers. The three new writers who have jumped on board the TARDIS are Nina Metevier, Maxine Alderton, and Charlene James. Also making their debut in 2020 and joining The Fam are four new directors. I say The Fam as in I'm quoting from the document, by the way. That's not me saying that. Are four new directors ready to travel through space and time. Nida Manzoor, Emma Sullivan, Jamie Magnus Stone, and Lee Haven Jones. In addition, three writers will return from Series 11. So Vinay Patel, who wrote Demons of the Punjab, Ed Heim, who wrote It Takes You Away, and Pete Matigue, or Matike, who wrote Kablam. So those guys are coming back for Series 12. And the Chibbers has said that we're thrilled that Doctor Who continues to attract some of the most exciting and dynamic talent working in television. Along with our returning faces, we're excited to welcome new members to the Doctor Who family. The Doctor Who team is crammed with British television's brightest writers and directors. We've adored working with them, and we can't wait to show you the explosive stuff they've created. And this is really funny. I love this. And a lot of these press releases and stuff, the BBC says, a note to the editors. So basically, this is what you have to quote if you put this out in your blog post or video, whatever. Jodie Whittaker returns as the 13th Doctor in early 2020, when Doctor Ooh. Who makes an explosive return to screens for another action-packed series of thrilling adventures. Mandip Gill, Bradley Walsh, and Tosin Cole will be reprising their roles alongside an exciting host of soon-to-be-announced guest artists. And just a very quick run-through. So in terms of the new directors, Emma Sullivan, she was named Screen of International Stars of Tomorrow after her short film After Tomorrow was nominated for some awards at the Cannes Film Festival, and she won Best Short Film at Edinburgh Film Festival. She's also directed for Call the Midwife and Silent Witness. Nida Manzoor, who was named one of Broadcast Magazine's Hot Shots back in 2015. Since then, she has gone on to direct BBC comedy drama Enterprise, and has recently received a nomination for her work. She's also currently writing and directing a music, original music comedy for Channel 4 called Lady Parts. And Jamie Magnus Stone is a film director and animator who graduated from the National Film and Television School. He created and directed the BAFTA-nominated short Orbit Ever After, and other work includes Tripped and The Last Dragon Slayer. And Lee Haven Jones, he went on to direct multiple episodes of hit drama The Bay, Vera and Shetland, and stuff like that. And then the writers, Nina Matevia, I hope I'm saying that right, is the co-creator and co-writer of teen thriller The A-List. Maxine Alderton has written for CBBC's The Worst Witch and also the long-running series Emmerdale.
I hate the soaps. Sorry. I absolutely detest soaps. Violent,
me too,
boring, man. Depressing rubbish.
Charlene James has previously written for television show A Discovery of Witches. As well as the award-winning theatre play Cutting It. Discovery of Witches, I think that was produced by... Who was the showrunner with RTD? Julie Gardner. Julie Gardner, yeah. Ed Heim was nominated for BAFTAs. He's wrote an episode of Skins, as well as the incomplete record works of a dead boy. So you can kind of get the picture, you know. A lot of these writers have written for some fairly popular shows, been relatively successful. So, you know, this is always a really good thing, you know, when they want to keep the show fresh and new stuff happening. The best way to do that is obviously to recruit new talent and mix it up a bit with some existing writers and stuff. So I think it's a good thing, dude. I think getting more people on board is good.
Yeah, I think so as well. Because, I mean, hopefully that means Chibnall will write less of the episodes himself, because I think he overstretched himself with Series 11. For me, his stories were the weakest.
Yes.
If I'm adding that up correctly, because do we know how many episodes we're getting?
We don't.
For Series 12?
Not yet, no.
Oh. Because I was going to say, it sounds like there's more writers, so I'm assuming that means he's writing less stories.
Hopefully, yeah.
He'll do the opener, I assume, and he might do the final again. Oh, dear. After Rancor, we can only hope. But, it sounds like he's got a few more writers in, which is good. I like the sound of the returning writers, because out of those episodes, I liked Demons of the Punjab. I know people were very mixed on that one, but I do remember liking that particular one.
It was okay, actually. Yeah, it's pretty good.
It wasn't bad, was it? It Takes You Away, I liked that one as well. And again, that is such a Marmite episode. I know some people hated it. I liked that one. And what was the other one? Oh, Kablam. Now, most people loved Kablam. I didn't like it, but it wasn't so much to do with the story. I just found the acting terrible in that particular episode, but I thought the story was good. So, as for the returning writers, I think they're good choices. Yeah, I'm quite pleased to see them coming back, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, It Takes You Away. We both rated that an 8.5. So that was a decent one.
Yeah, I remember really liking
series.
That. Yeah.
Yes. And then Demons of the Punjab, 8.5. You gave it a 9. So we really like that one.
Did I? Wow. Yeah.
And then, Kablam, we didn't rate that so well. But yeah.
Did you? Yeah, it's weird, because I felt like I was really in the minority with Kablam, because I didn't connect with it at all. From what I remember, not the story. I just thought the performances were so cheesy and I didn't really enjoy it. But a lot of people did. A lot of people liked that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there we go. Some new talent on board to mix it up a bit for Series 12. Sounding good.
Yeah, definitely sounding good. Right, on to some absolutely cracking news now. We, as many of you know, sadly lost the tremendous writer, Terence Dix, earlier this year. BBC Books have got some plans in place for an absolutely awesome project to do with Terence called The World Cup of Terence Dix. Now, I'm not a football fan, so initially I kind of saw that. I thought, what the heck? But this is such a cool thing. So they're going to publish a hardback collection of some of Terence's target novelizations. He wrote over 60. Can you? I mean, that man, 60 novelizations.
That's crazy.
To choose from. And so what they're going to do is this World Cup of Terence Dix is they're going to open it up to the fans to ask which titles should be included in that. In collections. So how do you choose the best? How does The Abominable Snowman rate against Genesis of the Daleks? How do you leave out The Planet of the Spiders to make room for the Auton invasion? What about The Three Doctors? With so many to choose from, BBC Books is seeking some expert advice from the fans. On Monday the 18th of November, BBC Books will be offering Doctor Who fans the chance to vote on social media for their favourite works by Terence Dix to be included in the collection. So I think this is absolutely fantastic. I love the sound of this. I just think his backlog of work is so impressive. He was great writer for Doctor Who. So this is brilliant. But they're absolutely right. So many great titles to choose from. Now, have I missed out how many they are whittling it down to? The book will be based around 10.
Not a lot. Yeah.
Just 10.
Mm-hmm. Mind you, I suppose.
10 novels. Yeah. That's all. Oh.
10 stories in one book. I suppose, yeah, that is. It will be quite a beefy book.
It will be, yeah. Yeah.
So you'll need to make sure that you follow the BBC Books Twitter account, which is at DWBBCBooks, or one word. We'll link to it in the show notes as well. Make sure you follow that. So this is not going to be on the official Doctor Who Twitter account. This is the BBC Books account.
Hmm.
And they'll do it over 5 days. 64 different stories will be sorted into 16 groups of four. And then fans will vote and vote until they get to their winners that will go into the book that way. So I think this is, I'm with you on this. I think this is brilliant. I love the idea that, because Terence, the essence of this, I suppose, is that Terence Dix was such a driving force in the classic years of Doctor Who that, in a way, it does feel like his work belongs to us, the fans, you know? It does feel like so many of us that have gone through his books and have watched the stuff that he either script edited or wrote, it does feel like he's just been there with us over the years, you know, not just pumping out content, but such a friendly guy as well. Whenever you saw him at some of the smaller conventions, just always got time for people and is always really nice. And he's just like the embodiment of Doctor Who, really. He was just the man, wasn't he? So I
think such a massive part of it. Yeah.
So I think by opening this up to the fans to decide on what their favourite stories are, is such a good thing. I mean, don't get wrong, there's nothing wrong with putting out a book with what the editors at BBC Books think are the best stories, and chances are they would have picked up some cracking stories. But to have this fan engagement involve the fans in this as well is very good. So fair play to those guys at BBC Books. This is a cracking idea.
They probably looked at the backlog and thought, right, now let's whittle this down. Where the hell do we start? I know. Throw it open to the fans. Let's let them decide, which I think is a great thing. And I agree with what you said about Terence. I always love it when he pops up on the DVD extras. Like you said, he's always kind of just there, and he knows what he's talking about. He's so heavily involved in Doctor Who during his time. So, but I love him on the DVD extras. He's funny. He's honest. He's informative. He's just a character. One of the big characters from Doctor Who. Yeah, yes. Fantastic news this is. I love it.
Yes, so this starts this Monday, actually. So Monday, the 18th of November. Make sure you're following the BBC Book Twitter account. Just one more time, at DWBBCBooks. That's the name of the Twitter account. And there's a hashtag if you want to keep track of what's going on. It's just Terence Dix World Cup.
Brilliant.
That'll keep you abreast of what's going on. So that's all we have for news. Let's see what's going on over at, it's a bit cheesy, over at Merch Corner.
Merch Corner. Merch Corner. Merch Corner.
It's a bit rubbish, but it's pretty. It's very pretty.
Well, there you are, young man. What do you think of that now, eh? A Viking helmet.
I know, it's on the telly. It's everywhere.
I don't know whether to be impressed or disgusted.
If I work in a shop now, it'd help.
Doctor Who vinyls. We love them. Well, you collect, we both love them. You collect them.
I love them.
It was one of my, nice. We love them. It was my conscious decision when they started to do these special edition LPs that I was not going to jump on board. For once in my life, I made a sensible, financially sensible decision. To say, because I know my personality, you know it as well.
Yeah.
Once you start, that's it. The game's up. Every time they bring out a new one, it's like, am I going to listen to this? No.
No.
Would it look amazing on the shelf? Yes.
Yes.
It does that warrant buying it? Yes. Do I need to buy it because I've got FOMO? Yes. So I made, but I know my personality. So I thought, well, I'm not going to collect some, but this could be the one that trips me up.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. I think the artwork and the actual design, especially on the exclusive version of this, is absolutely beautiful. So
lovely.
Yeah, to crack on with it, the next is it the next one? I think it's the next one. The Web Planet is coming to vinyl here in the UK, and actually no, US and Canada as well. And they're going to release two versions like they usually do. There's the standard version and then there's the exclusive version. Now, the only difference between the two, so the it's got one of those lovely sort of hard case, not hard case, but, you know, a hard sleeve for this as well, which is lovely. Mm-hmm. And all the artwork and the notes inside, all really beautiful. The artwork, such the colours are just...
I love the artwork.
That's what's making me think this would look so good on the shelf. Mm. They all look... between both versions, they're exactly the same. But on the exclusive version, the actual vinyl record itself is different. So on the standard one, it's that... So the two primary colours used in the artwork is this really beautiful kind of pinky... corally almost color. It's so good.
Coral, yeah.
With this sort of turquoisey blue color. So the color of the vinyl on the standard one is that pinky color. There's another color that this probably explains it better, which escapes me, but that's the color on the vinyl. On the exclusive one, it's a transparent one, but it's got like a kind of splatter effect of the blue and the pinky corally color across the vinyl, and it just looks so good.
It does look gorgeous.
It does, yeah. So both pressed on 180 grams vinyl. It's a really nice quality, and it's limited to 500 copies for the exclusive one. I don't think there's a number on the standard one. I don't think there is. And again, this is part of the Vinyl Who thing that's been going on for the last year or so. Very, very cool. And so the story itself, the Web Planet, are you happy with this one on vinyl?
It was a surprise choice. I haven't watched Web Planet for a long time. I know the last time I put it on, I struggled with it. But it's not really because of the story. They smear the lens to make it look like a planet, and it just bugs me. It's like watching through a tub of Vaseline. It really annoyed me, so I think that was the reason I switched it off. But I can't remember much about the story, but I'm happy to have a Hartnell vinyl come in. I agree with you. I think the vinyl itself looks absolutely beautiful, especially on the special edition. And as you know, I have no willpower whatsoever, so I've been buying all of these so far. I'll tell you, they hand on heart are absolutely as gorgeous in hand, if not more so. They are expensive. I agree with you. Once you know, it's a difficult, you know, it's a dangerous, sorry, not difficult. It's a dangerous slope to go down if you start collecting them, because they are so nice. But I don't know if you saw, but I posted some pictures of the Abominable Snowman one that I got
awesome.
Recently when that arrived, and just opening it up is, it really is a thing of beauty. And sometimes that phrase is used, overused, but believe me, it is. It's fantastic. So yeah, I'm very happy with this. I immediately pre-ordered it. I didn't hang around. I didn't even question it. I added it straight to my basket, the exclusive version. And the reason I did that is because the Abominable Snowman one sold out very quickly after release. So the pre-order went up, and I know that a few people missed out, not because they didn't order it, but because Amazon either messed up and sent them the wrong one, which unfortunately seems to happen a lot with these. It's really annoying. It happened to me with the last one, the Dalek one. They sent me the standard after I ordered the special, but they sorted it very quickly. I know that happened again with Abominable Snowman, and one of my friends theirs got lost in the post, just didn't turn up. By the time Amazon resolved it, they hadn't got any left. So she's ended up getting the standard version, which is very nice. But when it's not the version you ordered, I can imagine that's quite frustrating. So I don't want to miss out on this. I've pre-ordered it straight away.
Yeah, good shout, mate. Yeah, I think I'm going to... Oh, it's really tempting to get this one. They are expensive. They're £50. But what trips you up a little bit is the price for both of them. So the exclusive version is the same price as the standard one. So if you want the exclusive one, make sure you get the right one, because like I said, everything else in the set is identical. It's only the actual vinyl record itself that's different. Right. So if you want the exclusive one, they, like Adam said, they do go fairly quick. So and these are out fairly soon. So the 13th of December. these are released. So
not too long, is it? Actually, that's just... Sorry.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, that's coming around pretty quick. I was just going to say, hopefully they don't delay it, which then made me think, of course, you've heard that tragic news that they've delayed the season 26 box set, which was coming out on... Yeah, but I knew that was going to happen.
Yeah, of course,
That was a given. I'm not too bothered. I mean, I am bothered because I can't wait to get it, but I'd already kind of mentally prepared myself that was going to happen. So, and it gives me time to get Christmas out of the way and actually get some money again, hopefully.
Yeah.
So I think it's gone back to like January the 20th or something. It's not massive, but, and it makes Fenric more exciting because we're both going to the Fenric screening. So we'll get to see it even earlier.
True.
So yeah. So it's all good. But yeah, back to the vinyl.
Back to the vinyl, yeah. So, and also, if it's coming up to that time of year where, for selfish reasons, if you want to pick this up for your own collection, then absolutely cool. But if you have a significant other or somebody who's a Doctor Who fan, you're like, oh, what should I get them for Crimbo? This could be a cool one, especially if they're into Classic Who. This could be a nice pickup.
It is. Yeah.
That's it for merch. Very light on merch this week. Yes, review time.
It is, yeah.
What have we got knocking around? what we got knocking around on the old review?
It's that cheeky old chappy Captain Jack Harkness, and it is Torchwood.
Where's the SUV? Has it been stolen?
No, we have.
We really are in 1941. What if we can't get back?
People are dropping through time and they are going to bring every disease in history through your doors. You scared enough yet?
Open the rift now and the whole world could suffer. But who knows what will come out? It's a trap! To incite total chaos and destruction.
We don't even know who he is.
He's our leader.
Not anymore.
You can't control time. You can't send them back. What are you going to do?
Well, think of something.
Open the rift.
All these cracks around the world, they're diversions. It's what Villis wants.
Captain Jack Harkness, 133rd Squad.
Ooh, look at Yanto picking up his handbag.
He's grown a pair, hasn't he? Yeah. He's suddenly getting stuck into all sorts of scraps. Yeah. Shooting people and, God, yeah, where's that all been bottling up underneath?
It has been bottling up, hasn't it? All series, he's been desperate to throw a few slaps
moping
around.
Moping around, changing the coffee cups and then suddenly
but mind you, Owen did say what we've all been thinking. You're basically just the tea boy.
that was what pushed him over the edge. That was it. He saw red.
I must apologize slightly. The only trailer that I could find for this actually encompassed this and the next one, End of Days, because it's a two-parter, so I couldn't find one just for this episode, but it's got most of it in there, I suppose.
Yeah.
So, yes, Captain Jack Harkness was released, or broadcast, should I say, back on the 1st of January. So New Year's Day, 2007.
Really?
Yes. It was written by Catherine Tregenna. It was directed by Ashley Way and stars the usual Torchwood hub plus half a dozen supporting cast members. And the story is there's like ghostly goings on at this kind of abandoned or derelict dance hall somewhere. So Jack and Tosh go off to investigate, and they pretty quickly find themselves stranded in the year 1941. And it becomes apparent what's happened, something to do with the rift. So Gwen, Owen and Yanto start they're on the case to try and figure out the clues to get them back. Tosh has left them some formulas littered around for them to match up with the formulas they've got back at present time to kind of get the rift working again properly. Whereas Owen's a bit more gung-ho. He's like, no, I'm just going to open it up fully and we're going to see what happens. It should be all right. And that's what leads to the scraps with Yanto and so on. And but essentially the story is more around a little bit of Captain Jack's history. They're quite clever at keeping things locked away still. So we know a little bit more. He does reveal a bit to Tosh. Yeah. And also his interactions with the soldier that gets killed in action, who Jack adopts his name. So Jack goes back and adjusts the records a little bit and takes his name. And so we actually see that person that his namesake. So a little bit of history around Captain Jack as well. So what do you reckon, buddy? The penultimate story to the end of series one. What are your thoughts on it?
It's funny because unlike a lot of series one, which I seem to have completely forgotten, as we've been going through every episode, I'm like, I don't remember this. And it's almost as if I've been retconned in real life. I did remember liking this one. This is one of the ones that has stuck in my mind over the years as being a good one. I remember liking it, you know, when I first watched it. That's why I was surprised when you said it was New Year's Day, because I was thinking, oh, right, I don't remember watching that on New Year's Day, but I must have done because I watched it when it went out.
Probably still asleep.
Yeah, but I remember enjoying it then. I haven't watched it for some time, actually. And I watched it last night, and I think we were watching them very similar time because you tweeted that you'd just finished watching it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I've literally just finished watching it as well. So I think we were watching this at the same time. It's the riff. And I'm happy to say, for the most part, I enjoyed it again. It wasn't quite as good as I remembered it. I remember it being really stuck in my mind at the time as being, oh, that was a great episode. But it's good, and I did enjoy it, and I think overall it's a really cool story. I love the to-in and throw-in from this location, seeing it in the modern day all derelict and shut and closed down, you know, this lovely hall to what it would have been during the war, this beautiful dinosaur. I love all that stuff. I think the timey-wimey sort of story actually works quite well for a change. It's kept fairly simple. Although we're thrown back and forth through different time zones, it's, you know, clear to follow exactly what's going on. I really love the fact we get to see that Jack stole someone's name, because up until this point, you just assume he is Captain Jack Harkness. And I really like that idea that he's, you know, actually taken someone's identity. And you know, we wouldn't have known any of that if it wasn't for this story. So that's good. And it ties in very nicely with this thing about him not dying and the fact that he says something, doesn't he, that I was brought back to life and I didn't know who I was or something like that. And so that ties in very nicely with Rose saving him in the Partner of the Ways, which is why I assume he can never die. It's because of that. She brought him back to life, so he's sort of immortal. So I like that. I like it's just enough. He's still an enigma. Captain Jack, he's still a mystery, still a lot we don't know. He could be the face of Bo for all we know. So it's still a mystery there. I like it. But in this one, we get some little breadcrumbs and it's just enough, I think. So overall, I thought this is a good story. Yeah, I enjoyed it. It definitely left me wanting to go on to the next one, which is something I haven't had particularly so far in series one of Torchwood. I've kind of enjoyed them, but I haven't been in any rush to you know, watch any more after I finished watching it. This one, I was kind of like, oh, I kind of feel like moving on to the next one, actually, but I didn't. I'll save it for when we get to it. But yeah, decent, I think. A decent one, this.
Cool.
Right,
cool.
Over to you. What do you reckon?
Yes, I was... I do quite like this one, actually. I think it's... I think it provides Torchwood with something that has been lacking a little bit in series one overall. I think the majority of our reviews, as we've gone through Torchwood, series one for now, has been, yep, the story is potentially okay, pretty good, and there's some good little moments, but the coherence between the members of the hub just haven't quite gelled. You know, so I think in this one, even though they've split off a little bit, I just feel like they have found their feet a little bit. It felt like they'd gone up a little notch in terms of, and I think that's mainly because, I mean, we were joking earlier, but maybe that's because a lot of stuff has been bottled up with a couple of them. So we still have Owen that's still hurting a lot. You can tell from his, when he fell in love with what's her face, the pilot. Because Owen brings, Yanto brings that up. It touches a bit of a nerve with him.
And then Owen brings up Cyber. Oh, it's all kicking off.
Yeah. So, and then Owen is also, you know, he's a bit of a chip on his shoulder as well, because he says to Yanto, look, since Wasserface died, we are terrible with names. We really are.
I know. Listeners know.
Yeah. So when, you know, as soon as Wasserface died, he's kind of self-promoted himself into second command. Yanto doesn't really see it that way, because Owen says, you're just the tea boy, and kind of alludes to a little bit about Yanto, because he said, you know, I'm a lot more than that. So he's like, oh yeah, what have you done, sort of thing. And then obviously with Tosh and Jack, they have a really good, I think they had a great story actually, Jack and Tosh in this one, for obvious reasons. But what's kind of cool also, I think one of our listeners alluded to this, is that it's almost a Gwen Light story, which is a real relief for me, because I feel like we have been bogged down quite a lot over the majority of series one has been somewhat focused on Gwen and her affair with Owen and all that stuff. So it's really, it was a breath of fresh air really, to not have to sit there and watch Gwen moaning and, you know, in a turmoil about what she's putting Rhys through and all that stuff. It was good to not have that for an episode. And
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, and some of the performances are very good as well. Actually, you know, John Barrowman's not been, we haven't rated him mega highly so far, but I think in this one he had a great performance. The actor that he interacts with quite a lot, the actual Captain Jack Harkness, I thought he was really good. And the sort of testosterone between Owen and Yanto, you know, those two kicking off for the most part, I thought that was really good as well. I think Torchwood as a series just needed that. And it's just a shame that it's come so late on in the story, in the series, sorry. I think if they'd have done it three or four episodes before, then it would have been good. But it was good to have them split apart and some emotion going on and a bit of a change of the formula. So, but no, I think overall, this is a pretty good one in terms of some of the awful stories that we've reviewed thus far for series one. So yeah, it's pretty good, this one.
Yeah, series one's definitely been much more of a mixed bag than I was remembering, definitely. I think certain ones stood out to me in my mind, and this is one of them. It's a great story for Jack, I think. And you're right, I think Barrowman does a good job with the script. He's quite smug in it. There are times when I love Jack, but there are times when I think, oh, he's a bit full of himself, isn't he? Like, he waltzes in and he's, you know. But, you know, I do think it's a good story for Jack. I love the whole thing that we get to meet the real one. And what's the name that Jack takes on? Is it James Harper?
James Harper,
like that? Yeah, which is cool. I thought overall it works. There was a couple of bits that didn't work for me. There was, for example, I really like this idea of, what's her name? Nikate, well... Tosh, that's the one. I'm trying to think of her real name. Tosh.
Yeah.
Really like the idea of her hiding the note and then it being found all those years later.
Oh, yeah.
I just didn't quite get how Gwen knew where it was. I don't know if I missed something.
Sixth sense.
It just seems...
Yeah,
I thought that was a bit clunky in terms of the writing. I thought it was a great idea that she stores it there and then all these years later Gwen can find it. But Gwen sort of just sees Billis and then he walks around the corner and then she's like, oh, that door's there. That door to that power box is open. I better have a look in there. And I just thought that it seemed a bit odd, a bit clunky in terms of the writing. Mm. So there were little moments like that that didn't quite hook up. And I think they could have been ironed out by the writer. And, you know, perhaps the director as well, just the way it was directed. But yeah, apart from those little niggly moments, I thought it was pretty good. I liked the characters in it. I liked the real Jack Harkness. I thought he gave a good performance. Kind of felt for him. You kind of knew from the minute he met Jack that you're like, oh, these two are going to get together. But I think even that was handled quite well, because that scene when they do finally dance and have that kiss and all that, it could have been really cheesy and a bit like, oh God, like, you know, because you can see it coming a mile off. But I don't know if it's the music or the way it's shot or whatever. I think actually it's quite a nice moment. Well, the dance, the kiss goes on a bit for me. I was like, yeah, get on with it, Jack, and get out. I'm not a fan of watching people kiss on TV at the best of times. So I was a bit like, yeah, it's a really nice moment, nice dance. So yeah, have a quick kiss and, you know, get gone. But yeah, I thought that played out pretty well as well, considering, you know, you knew inevitably that was going to happen all along.
Yes, but, you did.
So I thought that was pretty good. I'm going to say this, I'm just going to get this out of the way as well. I love we're talking about little references that are hidden in this, which tie in nicely with Doctor Who. So obviously the Rose thing, bringing him back to life, was cool. There's a Vote Saxon poster, which we see straight away, which is immediately was like, hey, you know, it's bringing back the...
That was cool, actually.
That was a cool little memory. So stuff like that, loads of little tidbits to pick up on if you got your eye on them. So that was good.
Yes.
Yeah. Just overall, it's a nice story actually, and having Billis just popping up in the background as well, just like, you know, he's up to something.
Yeah.
But you're not quite sure what. And I thought he was utilized really well, because he just pops up just as you're sort of getting into the story and it needs a bit of action or it needs something to sort of bring you back around. He pops up. And so I thought he was used really well, like when he's taking the picture on that funny camera and then he comes and catches them in the office and stuff like that. I think he was just... He sort of glued the episode together for me, Billy. So I just love the fact he's just always there. You're not quite sure when he's going to pop up, but he's there scheming and plotting in the background. And we still don't quite know what he was up to. I guess that gets picked up in the next episode. But yeah, so I liked that side of it as well. The Billy side.
Yeah, that provided a little bit of mystery to what was going on. Because yeah. The actual essence of the story was relatively simple. Jack and Tosh are stranded via... something to do with a rift in another time. And then in present time, you've got Gwen, Owen and Yanto trying to piece together the clues to bring them back. So it was fairly simple. So yeah. He provided a little bit of, a little bit of chin stroking. Like, what's he up to then?
And he's a creepy character, isn't he? The way he plays he's creepy. Yeah.
Very well. Yeah. Yeah. I like that because again, you mentioned it earlier that it was potentially one of the first times that we've reviewed series one where you actually got to the end of an episode and you thought, oh, actually I could carry on here.
I definitely would have. I definitely felt like watching the next one. Mm. And I think Billis was a big part of that because he's still out there and that sort of strand hasn't been tied up. I definitely was up for watching the next one.
Exactly that. Yeah. You just let me go and put the kettle on. I'll get part two queued up, ready to go. And so I honestly felt like that as well. I thought, forgot about Billis. Yeah, he's intriguing.
And I'd forgotten that I was a little bit worried when I was about 40 minutes into the episode. There still seemed to be a lot to be resolved. I was a bit worried of like, oh, does this end on a cliffhanger? Is this a proper two-parter? Because we have been doing two-parters together, haven't we, to sort of keep it all sort of neat. And I was a bit worried, oh, should we have done this and the next one together? But actually, I think we made the right call because it does stand alone, I think. And it, as far as I remember, and I'm hoping I'm right in saying this, I think the next episode stands on its own 2 feet. So I think it was good to review this just on its own. I think it's, as far as I know, although there are strands that tie into the next story, I think this is fairly standalone in its own way.
Yes.
So in that sense, I thought that was good as well.
Yeah. They could have easily just left Jack and Tosh still stranded.
Yeah.
And then resolve that in the next part and then carry on with it. Because I think the next part is more around the wider issue of the rift. I
seem to remember something coming through it. Yes. I'm actually kind of looking forward to it because I haven't watched that for years, but I might be wrong. My memory of what does come through was I remember being disappointed when I finally saw it on screen. I was like, oh, God.
Yeah, the CG's not amazing.
I do remember thinking that the CG of what comes through is not great. But I'm kind of looking forward to seeing it again, see if it's as bad as I remember. But anyway, I'll leave that for next time. I'll tell you what, just totally unrelated, but you know when Tosh is writing the thing in blood, I couldn't help but notice it's like nothing like what actually... It's all smudged and it's all over the place and she's trying to write in blood. And then Gwen gets out the formula. It's all neatly written. I was thinking, wow, did she rewrite that? Because that's nothing like what she was writing when she was actually doing it.
This is television, dude.
They have to...
Because when Gwen unfolds the note from the little carrier bag, not the little see-through bag.
Yeah.
Us as the viewer need to be able to clearly make out the formula.
Of course.
It was just a big smudged
of blood
mess, yeah.
And Billis has scrubbed half of it out. It's a bit like Owen finding the tin as well. There were things like that. I know it's to move the story on pretty quick, but I was thinking, you know, that's lucky, isn't it, that tin hasn't been thrown out after 40 odd years. Just happens to be there for Owen to find within minutes. But I like the idea behind it though. I love the idea that those clues have been left, but they didn't all find them quick, it has to be said.
Yeah, true. I mean, yeah, there's a couple of little bits here and there that you would, you know, if you went back and did it again, if you had more time to work, I'm sure you would. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe who was the writer on this one? Catherine Tregenna. Maybe this is like completely what she wanted. I'm not sure, but I think it's just the world of Doctor Who. I think in every single episode, including Torchwood, I think there are little bits where you think, well, why did she do that? Why did that happen? Surely it would have been better. But, you know, that's hindsight for you, I suppose.
It's there to move the story, and that's absolutely fine. Yeah. I'm just going to say, actually, that does remind me as well that although, like you said, the performances in this are pretty decent, there is one bit of classic rubbish acting from Owen when he's like pretending that, no, I haven't found anything anyway. I'm like, oh, that should have been reshot. Come on. What's his name? Byrne, isn't it? Who plays Owen? Byrne, could you just do that again? Because that was like something out of a school play. nothing to see here. So I'm just off back to torture. I think he was trying to do it in a quirky, funny way, but that was a bit rubbish.
I thought the same.
Because Gwen sort of acts like, oh, fine. See you later then. Like, yeah, you wouldn't have picked up on that.
it almost needed a little bit of kind of classic comedy music in the background for that bit.
Especially when he does the sort of doodle-ooded, you know,
almost needed like a little Monty Python bit of music in the background, because it is very theatre, that bit. You know, it's a bit like, oh no, he didn't.
Yeah, exactly.
It's that kind of vibe. I know exactly what you mean. I thought the same. I was like, this doesn't really align with, because Gwen and Owen have got obviously a connection of some sort. So they know each other quite well by now. So really and honestly,
like, what's he up to?
Exactly. Really and honestly, she should have clocked. But maybe, you know, she's just got other things on her mind. She's happy to, maybe she did know. She's just like, whatever.
She just didn't care. She's like, whatever, Owen. Yeah.
maybe that's the case, but.
Yeah, it's one of the few, I mean, I have to say, I haven't written many negatives for this story, which is nice. You know, like a lot of the tortured ones so far, it's been a very mixed bag, but there are very few negatives in this. And so the ones I am picking up probably seem very trivial, but it's because it's mostly positive on this one. Mm-hmm. I did wonder, what did you think to they do have a bit of a sort of racist thing going on when Tosh first arrives, and I'd forgotten about all that. And I was thinking, is this going to go for on the whole story, or is this, you know, but how do you think they handled that part of it, the sort of racist term? Because there's a woman that really kicks off at Tosh at one point, isn't she?
Yes.
And it's quite uncomfortable to watch. I thought, but is that the sort of thing you can imagine happening back then? Do you think it was quite a good bit of writing, or?
Well, it's difficult to say. I mean, I'm assuming it was fairly accurate in that during that time period, people were more defensive and scared of that, you know. So, and I think it was kind of done fairly well, actually, because it didn't ram it down your throat that this was a thing. They assumed that you knew what was happening around that time period. So it doesn't need a lot of explanation as to why people are quite confrontational towards Tosh. It doesn't need exposition to explain that. But I thought it was done in a way, because there were a couple of, because there are two kind of areas in this episode, aren't there? You've got the race thing with Tosh, and then you have the homosexual sort of theme that runs through the story between both Jack and James. And I think they're both potentially, they're like, not that they're controversial, I suppose, but, you know, they're the two things that if you were to pick out anything that would be viewed as controversial, it's those two things. So one of them was certainly rammed down your throat more than the other one, which is interesting. But, so I think the racism thing, I thought it was done okay, because they could have made more of a bigger deal of it. But I think that then would have been over the top.
Overshadowed the rest of the story. Yeah. Mate. I do like the way they resolved it. I really, because, you know, that woman's kicking off, and then they say, actually, the reason she's being mysterious is because she's actually helping us. She's part of the war effort. So, you know, you should have some respect for her, which that would have been true. There would have been people that perhaps some people would have been like, what are they doing in our country? Well, actually, they're helping your country. You just don't know it. Yeah. So I liked that. I really liked the fact that they turned it around in terms of that. The thing is with the Jack, when he starts dancing with the other guy, with Jack, so Jack and Jack, it shouldn't, in some ways, that scene shouldn't work because of the people at first, they start looking surprised, which I think they would in that time. They'd be like, what's he doing? I think they actually say that, don't they? Mm-hmm. But then the bit that shouldn't work, but it doesn't bother me and somehow does work, is they then just stand there and watch as if like they just watch the scene play out. And it does work. It looks, you know, the way it's shot and everything is great. But I was thinking, I don't know if that was really happening back then. I'm probably some of them would have walked out and have been a bit like, oh my God, what's going on? And, you know, I think there would have been more of a stir in the audience. But as it is, they just stand there and sort of just watch them dance. And there's no sort of reaction apart from the initial sort of gasp. There's no reaction after that at all. And I thought, well, that's probably not very true to life. But as I said, somehow it just kind of works within the scene. They just all stand there and watch as the light comes in. And it's actually really nicely done. But yeah. So out of the two themes, yeah, I think that was probably handled quite well.
Yeah, I don't think any of it was handled poorly, put it that way.
No, definitely. There wasn't anything there where I was going, oh, here we go. Like I said, nothing clunky in terms of the writing with those subjects. No, definitely not.
Yeah, it's interesting, actually, the story or the moments between Jack and Jack.
Jack and Jack, yeah.
Because it does take... Jack in a slightly different direction than what we've seen mainly from him. So like you said earlier, sometimes he's very, very cocky and he's very sure of himself and he's quite, you know, very, as a character, extremely confident, you know, especially around the subject of sex and relationships and stuff like that. So I felt like in this one though, and it may have been because of the obvious reason that this person, he knows he's going to die the next day in the story. So yeah, it's probably down to the sensitivity around that. But Captain Jack is very timid and quite withdrawn around him. Normally in any other story, it'd be all over him within like 10 seconds, you know, there's not a shadow of a doubt. So it is kind of cool to see John Barrowman playing that more subtle, vulnerable character. It's slightly different to what we've seen, you know, so far from him. And you could see it coming. You could see, even when he's trying to egg him on, like, you know, you shouldn't have let her go, mate, his girlfriend, go and give her a kiss and all that stuff, which kind of backfires a little bit. But even amongst all that stuff, you could tell that the actual Captain Jack had a thing for him immediately, sort of thing. So, so it was good to see that play out and you kind of knew where it was going. But that scene where they start dancing and then Jack comes back and they have a good old snog right in front of everybody. I forgot how long that goes on for, that kiss.
I think Barrowman was just enjoying it.
Do you probably. Know what? Yeah, I think that's just Russell T. Davis was there as well.
He's a very handsome chap, very chiseled, isn't he?
He's got that.
I was going to say, great casting, but I'll come to that when we get to the cast. But yeah, he was. It's not the worst person to have to kiss, I suppose.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, from John Barrowman's point of view, he probably didn't mind. He probably thought, like, I don't know if we've got that correctly. Can we go again? You know, another take. I don't know
if I often wonder, actually, if I was an actor, if I was doing, like, scenes of, with someone that was a bit hot and they were, and I'm having to kiss them or getting over, would you do that? Oh, can we just do that again? Because I don't think I quite nailed it.
Well, you say that, you know, but you hear a lot of stories of TV and film stars who talk about their on-screen kisses, and actually I think a large majority of them say how nervous they were.
Oh, it was so uncomfortable. I think rubbish. If I was in there, I'd be loving every blimmin' minute of it.
Take 22. Yeah, can we get some Vaseline, please? Jack's lips are going a bit dry here. But yes, it was done in a nice kind of way, because you felt like it wasn't anything sleazy or untoward. You could tell that they genuinely did like each other, so it was a nice kind of romantic feel to it.
It was a nice moment. As I said, it could have been very cheesy and cringy, but no, it was a nice moment. I thought I did like the end bit.
Moving on, what did you think to actually, we spoke about let's run through these quickly. So Tosh had a good one. I think Tosh had a good performance in this one.
Yeah, I think she was good in this. Yeah, I like Tosh in this one.
The only one thing I would say is that she did play the kind of wide-eyed, what's going on.
Yeah, it's funny. I thought that's when you said it. I think she was good, but she, performance-wise, still a little bit, it's probably not the right word, but amateurish sometimes in their performance. A little bit, yeah. Like you said, that wide-eyed, what's going on type thing. But good. I do like Tosh.
Yeah, it kind of reinforced the relationship between her and Jack, because there was a couple of times when Jack reassures her. He's like, you know, she's like, what if we get stranded? And he says, don't worry, I'll look after you. You know, so there, that does reinforce that a little bit. She has to be like the rabbit in the headlights, which is what I mean. She's quite... You know.
But I like it when she stood up to Jack when he's trying to fob her off, and she's like, "No, no, no! You've already got enough secrets for me. Like, explain yourself." She did step up to it at that point, which was good.
She was good though. I thought.
I liked Tosh. Very nasty when she's cutting her hand on that old tin as well. Yeah. Oh dear.
Eve Miles then as Gwen, a bit of a light Gwen, a Gwen light story. This one, she didn't really
definitely. And I think you're absolutely right. After all the stuff we've had with Gwen recently, I'm happy with that, because she's a great character. But she didn't need to do any more than she did in this. She's there. She's in there. We don't see anything of poor old Riggs this week, do we? We don't even get a flashback to him with a kebab this week. It's just left out. Gwen, I think she's fairly consistent in her performance. Eve Miles, I do think she's probably one of the stronger actors in this, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
She don't get a lot to do this week.
Bern Gorman then, Owen. Apart from the very funny comical...
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? It's apart from that one scene, he's good.
He's actually all right in this one. He's it's very intense. The couple of scenes with him and Yanto, they're properly having a good old row, good old ruck.
Yeah.
And he's good. And I was surprised. I remember when I first watched Yanto shooting him in the back, I was like, Jesus.
I actually didn't remember him shooting him. It's funny, because I thought, well, he won't, will he? Obviously. And then it's like, boom.
Yeah. And then,
like, he has.
And then they try to play it down later where he says something like,
you're a terrible shot.
Yeah. And he's like, I was meant to shoot you in. You can tell it kind of relaxes a bit more into the banter then. But he's a good sport, Owen, though. He doesn't, once his shoulder's fixed, he doesn't go and slap him for shooting him in the shoulder. But I think Owen's pretty good in this one. He's quite intense, which is when he's at his best, you know, when he's up for
he's
a ruck.
Still moping around after that one. But no, I think him and Owen and it's Yanto. Sorry. God, I've got the list in front of me and I'm still getting them wrong. Owen and Yanto, I think they play off each other quite well in those scenes, because they are quite shouty, but it's not too, they don't sort of ramp it up too much that it goes into the ludicrous. I think they're both pretty good in that, because it's weird, because I found myself sort of finding it sort of almost unintentionally funny. It was a bit like two sort of schoolboys having a bit of a ruckus
at times.
And that's why I was quite surprised when Yanto actually does shoot him. I was thinking, well, obviously he's not going to, but oh, he has. I thought those scenes are pretty good, and they do help to build a bit of tension, because, you know, the scenes, as nice as they are in the hall with Jack and all that, they are slow paced. I mean, they do take the pace down, so it's good to have those scenes with Yanto and Owen, where they're just, you know, where something's kicking off, just to balance that out a bit, I think. So I think they're both good in that. Yeah, it's nice to see a bit more from Yanto. What's his real name? Gareth David Lloyd. Yeah, nice to see a bit more from him. And to be fair, it's not his fault. He hasn't really just been given much in the scripts up until this point. So, yeah, nice to see him stepping up and getting a bit more of the action.
Yeah, I think we're all happy to see him grow a set at last.
Yeah, he does, at last.
At last, yeah. So it'd be interesting to see. I think Torchwood does evolve into a slightly different beast, you know, if I remember from series two onwards, because people like Yanto, Reese, you know, their characters evolve into something a lot more than what they were in series one. So it's good to see Yanto start that journey from being more than just the T-boy, which he literally has been for the most part up to this. So it was good. And I thought Gareth, he was like Bern Gorman, had that level of intensity, which I think was needed in those, especially those later scenes in the episode, where it's all kind of climaxing into, are they going to open the rift? Is Owen going to do it? Or is he going to shoot him? You know, all this arguing and shouting about. And Yanto, for some reason, seems to be very, very by the book, in respect that he knows that Jack would be miffed if he knew that they'd gone through his things, done all this stuff, and they were going to open the rift. Whereas Owen's more like, I don't give a beep about that. I just want to rescue them and get them back. And Yanto's like, nope, even if it means they're stranded and lost forever, we will not open the rift. So it was interesting to see him be really by the book and somehow elevate his position more than what he actually is. But
yeah, and old Owen's just thinking of his trousers, isn't he? Just wants that pilot back, not caring if it's the end of the world, just wants that blimmin' whatever her name is back.
Whatever her name is.
Yeah, she's in that rift somewhere. Yeah, I'm sorry to tell you, she's dead. Yeah. Or is she?
I lost my lover.
They're not very lucky in love, this lot, are they? I don't know, cyber conversions and rifts swallowing people up. Yeah. Jack's dead, and it's all a bit, it's very doom and gloom in the tortured love nest, isn't it?
Yeah, affairs and whatnot destroying people's lives. Yeah. That's working at Torchwood for you.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I wouldn't want to work there. I just want to talk about Billis as well, just quickly. Murray Melvin, I love his performance. It's an odd performance because sometimes he delivers his lines in a really odd way, and I wasn't sure if you were going to like him because I thought sometimes he does sound a bit like he's reading off the page, but it's just his style, I think, because I've seen him in other things, and I personally love Murray Melvin as Billis. There's something about the look. He just looks creepy as heck. And he's just, I don't know, the way he scuffles around, brilliant. All this, what's he doing? I think he's a great character. I love the look they've given him with the cravat and the suit and the slick back hair. It's just, I think they've just nailed that character. And I think he's perfect casting. I met Murray a few times over the years, but going back a long time, I used to work in the big HMV on Oxford Circus. In London, and he used to come into the classical department quite a lot. A really lovely man, a really, really charming. And I've met him since at a convention, and we had a little chat. I reminded him that I used to serve him all the time, and he was, oh, yes, he's one of these people. He looks terrifying. He's just got that, because he's got those very sort of piercing eyes. And I mean that in the nicest way, Murray. I know you're listening. You know what I mean? He's just got that look. He can, if he look gives you a glare, it could be frightening. But in real life, he's such a lovely, gentle, charming person. I just really love Murray Melvin. Something about him, I just love him. So I can't wait to see him again next week. I think Billis is a great character.
He is good, yeah. And I really like his look and his overall vibe. It kind of reminds me of an old school kind of Vincent Pricey, Hammer horror type of thing. Who's the other?
Yeah.
This is embarrassing.
Hammer horror, actually. Yeah,
this is embarrassing. But what's the
Vincent Price
name?
And... who are you trying to think of?
Who's Count Dooku from Star Wars and Lord of the Rings? What's his name?
Oh, Ian McKellen?
No. Who played Dracula in Hammer for years? What's his name?
Oh, yeah, I know you mean. I can't remember his name.
Him. This is embarrassing. How could I forget this guy's name? I'm going to have to stop what we're doing immediately.
It's because we're both so tired. Yeah, here I know exactly who you mean. I can't think of his name either.
Christopher Lee. Christopher Lee. That's the one. Yeah, he's got that Vincent Price, Christopher Lee, old school horror kind of look about him, which I really like. And it was just really intriguing to see, you know, what's this guy up to? You know, why is he sabotaging?
What's with all the clocks?
And the clocks, yeah. So that was really great. And his performance was brilliant. Like a really cool, creepy vibe. Mm. Yeah, very cool.
I'm glad that he did a convention. I think it was last year. At the London Film Fair, you know, the one at Westminster. He was at that. And I was so pleased when he got announced, because after sort of chatting to him all those times, and obviously I was dying to say to him, oh, can I get a selfie with you, Murray? But I never did, because, you know, when you work in a shop, it's not the done thing. And I probably would have got in trouble, but I always wanted to ask him for a photo and never did. So when he was announced at that convention, I was thrilled to finally get that picture with him. He was one of those, though, where he was quite happy to have a picture at the table, but he had a miserable old woman next to him that was like, no, Mr. Melvin isn't doing table photos. And I was like, oh,
sod off.
Yeah, I did. She was, I can remember this. And he just said, sorry, dear chap. I was like, no, you're fine. I'll get in a proper one with you later. It's all good. But so anyway, I was just glad to finally tick that box and get a photo with him, because he's awesome, is Murray.
I've been at a couple of conventions where you've paid some dosh for a signed photo, whatever. And you're like, can I just get a quick selfie? And they look like they're going to stand up and be up for it. But then the person next to him's like, no. You just think, oh, why don't you sod off?
Yeah, it's exactly what happened. He was quite happy to do it. He was more than happy. But yeah, I don't know.
That winds me up, mate. That happened a lot.
Yeah, it happened with Tom Baker, actually. We waited for the queue. They'd been letting, this is at the last London Film Fair. He had some right miserable women with him at that one, I tell you. they were awful. And Tom was just being Tom, just being brilliant. And they were letting some people have selfies and not others. And it was getting a bit, we were like, well, they've just let him have one. And so we said, oh, can we get a table? No, Tom isn't doing it. We said, but you just let him. And they were like, that's because he missed the photo shoot. And we were like, my friend got one this morning. And he's like, he didn't miss the photo. And, you know, so we were getting a bit of things. So we waited to the end of the day until there was literally no one in his queue and said, oh, would it be okay now if we just got a quick? No, absolutely not, she said. And it was just it's a power trip, isn't it? It's a power trip.
Yeah, we're going.
They're just loving their jobs a bit too much. These table people.
Jobsworth. Yeah, I'm going to reach for the rant button in a second, mate. If we don't move
on. Move on. but anyway, that's nothing against Murray because he's a.
Oh no, no.
He's a lovely chap, is Murray. I'll bump into him on the street one day and I'll get a selfie with him.
God, that's annoying.
And he'll say, "Oh, why don't you?" No, he won't. He's lovely.
That is bloody annoying now that we've spoken about it. I've had that a couple of times, yeah.
But I did get a professional one. Yeah. It's just I always like to have one on my phone as well. It's something more personal about that, I always think. And he looks so cool with his little table. I think I might be wrong, but I think he might have even had a cravat on. Nice. I can't remember.
Nice, perfect. I'll have to have
a look. Yeah. I'm not sure. He looks smart. I know that. He had a jacket, I'm sure.
He looks like the type of guy that the things that he wore in this episode are not too far from what he actually wears.
Oh no, it is. I will dig out somewhere. I've got because I did take a sneaky picture to the side and he's looked just as I took it. It might even be a little blurred. I can't remember. And I'll see if I can find it because he looks like Billis. He's got like a sort of blazer on or something, I think.
Yeah, no, he's good. He was good in this.
Yeah.
What about Matt Rippey then? He played the actual Captain Jack.
Hopkins. Yeah, I thought he was good casting, you know, and I didn't think I thought his performance was pretty good, quite laid back. And I mean, I've never seen this guy before or since, but I thought he gave a nice little performance, actually, considering how quickly him and Jack had to sort of fall for each other, for want of a better word. I thought it didn't seem too clunky. I thought the chemistry between the two was pretty good. I felt like they both got the story pretty nicely. Good little performance from him.
Yeah.
Has he done other work? What's he done since?
He's done some big stuff. He has actually. Yeah. He hasn't done much in terms of television. I think shortly after this, he kind of got a couple of decent breaks and has been in some really big films. Mm. But the good thing is that he's an actual American. So that's good casting straight off the bat because sometimes when you can't, unless you've got, what's his name? Hugh, who played House. Unless you've got someone like Hugh Laurie, who can do an absolutely immaculate American accent in something like House. Unless you've got someone like that, a British actor trying to do an American accent can sometimes come off as a little bit, school playground.
Yeah, I think it's funny though. I didn't realise he was actually American, and you know what? I'm going to confess. At one point, I thought, "Oh, his accent slipped there."
Oh, dude, really?
I did. I thought he was Welsh.
Oh, really?
I don't know. There's just one bit where I thought, I think the old accent slipped a bit there. But no, it's interesting. Clearly not, because he is American.
He is. Yeah. He went on to do Jack Ryan, Rogue One, The Dark Knight. He was one of the guys in charge of the two ships that the Joker was going to blow up, and Hellboy. He's done loads of really cool films.
I'm glad.
Not much TV, but I think his performance was very kind of solid, really. He didn't ham it up in any way. He didn't do, you know, you could just tell his kind of, you could tell that his character was indicative of the time where he's obviously gay inside. He's, you know,
repressed.
Yes. But the kind of job that he has and the position that he has was just not looked upon as acceptable at that time period. So you know, the way that he played that and just the way he looked at John Barrowman and gave him a certain smile, and you know, he really understood what that was about. So a great performance from him.
Yeah, it's good. And I just love the fact that we've sort of met the, in terms of the story, I love the fact we've met the real Captain Jack Harkness. I just really like that idea. It's a really simple idea, but I love the fact that Jack stole his name, and because he knew that he was going to die. It's very dark when you think about it, isn't it?
Yeah,
he knew he was going to die, yeah, so I could take his name and no one will know. So I just think that's a really cool little idea.
It's cool.
I don't know if that was Catherine Tregenna. I don't know if it was her idea or if Russell pitched it and she fleshed out. I have no idea, but because I think Russell's always in the background of these, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm not taking credit away from her. The chances are it was her idea. I don't know.
Well, could have been a bit of both.
Could have been a bit of both, yeah.
Yeah. It does feel like an RTD thing, that.
It does. I was going to say that, and I thought, well, I don't want to take anything away from her as a writer, because it could well have been her idea. But yeah, it feels like it might have been an RTD idea. I don't know.
Yes.
It doesn't tell me on Wiki, so we shall never know. Yeah. Unless I meet Russell and I ask him.
Yeah. Russell, we know you listen, mate.
Just now, shoot us a
tweet.
Man.
Yeah, shoot us a tweet or an email. Just let us know so we can clear this up.
Yeah.
We've spoken about Mr. Barrowman throughout the review. I think it's fairly safe to say. Yeah, I mean, my view is he gave a really good, subtle performance with this one. I think if he was his normal self, like really cocky and, you know, all over the other Jack, I don't think this would have worked as well. I think it was nice to see him try and keep the other Jack at an arm's reach throughout the story. But then it was, you know, like I said, quite a romantic moment when he sort of gives in, turns around, comes back, plants one on him to the aghast of everybody in the room. Yeah. He just stands there and watches. So yeah, I quite like John Barrowman in this one. Don't get me wrong, it's fun and it's cool when he's doing the usual Captain Jack stuff. But at times it's nice to see him like this.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good story for him because it's central to him, but he doesn't dominate it, if you know what I mean. There's lots of other stuff going on. So even though it's kind of about him, there's plenty of other stuff for the other people to do. I didn't feel like the rest of the cast were sort of in the background with nothing to do, apart from maybe Gwen. But so it's a good story for him. And like you said, I think he's clearly sort of taken the script with both hands and gone with it. So yeah, no complaints about Mr. Barrowman in this one. He was good.
Yes.
None of that awkward. Remember when him and Gwen were getting it on in the gun shooting range and all that nonsense? Yeah. None of that stuff.
None of that nonsense. Okay. I mean, I haven't really got anything else. The one thing I did have on my notes was the music was really good in this one. Murray Gold and Ben Foster teamed up, for this. So I think they did most of Torchwood, I think.
I'd agree with the music, because I think when that's what I meant about that scene when Jack and Jack are dancing. And I seem to remember just that was a nice scene, but I think a big part of that was the music, just really sort of overlaying it and stuff. So yeah, I thought the music was good in this as well. Yeah, just having a look at my notes, I don't think there was anything.
The other thing I've got while you're having a look is I quite like how they started to veer into the main Doctor Who show with this. So the next episode, was it End of Days? That's got quite a big kind of linkage into Doctor Who, hasn't it? So,
I can't remember, in all honesty.
Yeah, it's around the same time. It's around the same time period as Utopia in the Doctor Who series. Obviously, Captain Jack appears in Utopia, doesn't he?
Yeah.
So,
reviewed Utopia?
We have not, I don't think.
Oh, okay. I was about to say something. I'll save it then. So that's interesting then, because it is sometimes hard to try and work out the timeline in terms of Torchwood and Doctor Who, how they're flowing together. So, yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. Incidentally, I think the time period that this story is set in, I think is only like a matter of weeks or months before when we see Captain Jack turn up in... what's the Ninth Doctor story where?
Well, the Doctor dances.
The Doctor dances, yes. Yeah.
And Doctor dances and...
The Empty Child.
Empty Child.
Yes, sorry. Yeah. I think it's only like weeks or months before we see Captain Jack in The Empty Child. So from when this story is set in Jack's time stream, I think that's when we see him in that episode. That's interesting as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, a little bit of linkage around this time period for the two shows.
I like that. I just keep thinking back to the epic trailer that I still to this day cannot believe. What's the story where Tennant was? Well, it's the one where they're all at the end of it. So they brought in like Sarah Jane, Torchwood.
Oh, Stolen Earth.
Stolen Earth. I just remember seeing the next time trailer thinking like the door rolling back and Torchwood are in Doctor Who next week. And what? Sarah Jane's in it. And the way they linked the series together was absolutely amazing, actually. But I love the fact we get these little tie-ins. So, you know, at this point, in this early stage, just sort of just linking it, sewing it all together quite nicely, isn't it?
Yeah, it is nice that they do link them together. I mean, heaven, you know, it would just be such a bad idea if you created a spin-off and you didn't link the shows together. You just kind of relied on a cameo.
Can't think what you're referring to.
I know. I mean, that just wouldn't work. So I'm glad I'm glad that they linked the two shows together more than once.
That reminds me, whatever happened to the Shadowkin?
Whatever happened to him? Whatever happened to anybody in class? Because I don't know about you, but I can't remember anybody other than the main cast who were in class. Like any of the monsters. I remember the Shadowkin, but
yeah,
I remember the flowers, the venomous or poisonous flowers.
Oh, yeah, those killer flowers.
Jesus Christ.
Don't go down that road.
Yeah. Actually, incidentally, very quickly, there's this really cool series on Netflix at the moment. It's just called Criminal. And it's essentially these little isolated stories of, it centers around these police people who are interrogating people right up to the last minute. So these people have been held in custody and they're being interviewed by these specialist people, police people, to try and get a confession from them before they have to release them on bail. And the first episode stars David Tennant.
Oh, right.
You know, he's really good at playing the bad guy. I think he relishes in those roles where he gets to play
He does play bad good.
Mm-hmm. He does, yeah. And anyway, incidentally, the woman that was in class, who was the teacher?
She was probably the best thing in it, actually, yeah. Yeah,
she stars in this series called Criminal. It's her and David. It's a cool...
Oh, I bet they're quite good together, actually, because she was out of... You know, the whole class thing. She's probably the strongest actor in it, I think. Mrs. Quinn or something, wasn't it? Miss Quinn or something like that?
Yeah, I think so.
Is that the one you mean?
Yeah.
So I can imagine her and Tennant.
Wow. They're not in it together. She's in it, but she's not in the same scene as David Tennant's two other people interrogating him. But no, it's a great little series. Really, really good. Anyways, class aside.
I just have to say, my hopes have just been dashed for the second part of this. Well, because I was quite, you know, I was saying earlier about I was looking forward to watching, what's it called? End of Days follows this one. I've just seen it's written by Chris Chibnall.
Oh, dude.
Oh, no. Well. I mean, I sound like I'm being sarcastic. I genuinely just saw that and thought, oh, no. I promise you, I'm not trying to be negative. I'm not trying to be sarcastic. I genuinely just saw that and thought, oh, that's a shame.
Let me.
I mean, it might be good. I don't know. I can't remember.
Well, let me be the voice of the majority of fandom right now. Why don't you like Chris Chibnall, Adam?
Oh, no.
What's your specific problem with Chris Chibnall?
Explain yourself to exhaustion if you're criticizing anything to do with Series 11, Chris Chibnall, Jodie Whittaker. No, well, I'm not going there. But no, I just genuinely, I swear to you, I'm not trying to be funny. I'm not trying to be thing. I just looked at it, saw his name, and thought, oh, no. Because I was. Yeah, it might be good.
I tell you what, dude. I think our regular reviewer, Sammy.
Yeah.
She tweeted me the other day and said that she'd come across this video on YouTube of this guy who has put together, I think it's about a 10 or 15 minute rundown on why exactly Chris Chibnall just doesn't work as the showrunner for Doctor Who.
Yeah.
And again, like you, I'm not doing this because I want to put out some kind of negative vibe or a negative voice or anything like that at all. It's just on the subject of Chris Chibnall and so on. I will tweet it out. It's a really interesting watch. And I'll tell you what, mate, when I finished watching that, I thought, well, I don't agree with everything in the video, but I'll tell you what, he's made some very, very good points. So, yeah, we're kind of getting off topic a little bit, but I will tweet that video out. But so by the time you listen to this, I would have tweeted it out. So just go back through our list of tweets on our Twitter account And you'll see it on there. It's a very, very interesting watch, for sure.
Okie dokie.
Yes.
Cool.
So thank you for that, Sammy. Right. Torchwood, back on track. Anything else you want to mention before we put a score on it?
No, I think I'm all good. I think we covered it.
You're all good. Right, it's you to go first, dude.
Me to go first. I'm going for a 7.5 on this one. I was around about 8, but I don't know. I always think 8's just taken out to a really, really good story, and I just think this is a good story. In my mind, it was an 8. On a rewatch, it's a 7.5. Oh, still cool. Good. Still really enjoyed it. I just didn't find it as amazing as I remembered it being.
Okay.
Good, though. I did like it.
Yeah, cool. I'm going to go with a 7.
A 7? Okay.
Yes. Just because I felt like it was a good... It is a good story. It is a good story. And I do like the slightly more toned-down performance from Barrowman, and I like... some of the elements in here, but I just feel like it's still quite not there. Something about it is not quite sort of elevating it to kind of, amazing or classic status. It's not quite up there. But I still think it's a good solid episode.
It's definitely one of my favorites so far from series one. As I said, I feel in a way it should be an 8, but an 8 to me is something I think is really, really, really good. Mm-hmm. And then anything past an 8 is just fantastic. So I can't quite go to an 8 with it, but it's nearly there for me. I think it's a good one.
Yes. Yeah. Mm. No, I'm the same. Yeah. I think in terms of series one, definitely it's one of the better.
Yeah, I think stories. So.
Yeah. Okie dokie. What did our awesome listeners think? Of course, we had our regular reviewer, Sammy Satine from Down Under.
Where's the SUV?
Nope, that would be the trailer.
I was going to say, I thought Sammy had gone crazy with the review this week.
She's upped her production value. Sammy Satine from Down Under.
G'day, Gary and Adam. Sammy Satine here. So, Captain Jack Harkness is not even really called Captain Jack Harkness. Wow, I really didn't see that one coming. This introduces one Billis Munger, played by Murray Melvin, currently in Torchwood Dead Man's Switch by Big Finish. We never really find out what Billis is. I wonder if he's an alien or what. He's really interesting. I like his cravat. Also, did you notice Bad Wolf in the graffiti and the 3-vote Saxon posters? Anyway, it's interesting they chose World War II, considering when we meet Jack originally in The Empty Child, but Scott if so no danger of running into himself. I feel sad that the real Captain Jack dies, but he does get to snog Captain Jack before he dies, so at least he gets something. I give it 8 Captain Jacks out of 10. See ya.
8.
Nice one. I didn't spot Bad Wolf.
I did not, no.
No, I shall have to rewatch it. Let us know where that was, Sammy. Hmm. Obviously, I spotted the vote sax poster. That was obvious. But no, I didn't spot Bad Wolf.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Hmm.
So that's another indicator then of where this ties in. So that would be right, with an unearthly...
Empty child.
Sorry, an unearthly child. Bloody hell. Linking it to that. The empty child. That's interesting. Yeah. Okay, thanks for that, Sammy. Good as always. We had another review, audio review in. This is Matt Steele.
Hello, Gary and Adam. Matt Steele here again. Hope you guys are well and had a good week. So this week, Torchwood Captain Jack Harkness. Yeah, I thought this was probably the best episode out of Series 1, in my opinion. Thinking the standout characters are probably Captain Jack and Tosh. I think the story itself was genius and really shows off the team as a whole. Maybe the only character not to get much to do was Gwen, but then again, it's been quite a Gwen-centric series, so it wasn't too much of a bad thing. It was nice to see Yanto, grabbing the bull by the horns for once and actually, standing on his own 2 feet. The music in this was incredible. It really suited the tone of the episode. It was very creepy. And also, I think they were trying some new sort of camera angles with this story, and I think it worked really well. Overall, I'd probably give this an 8.5 out of 10. Anyway, have a good week, guys. I'll see you again.
An 8.5.
Thank you, Matt. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, I agree with you
as well.
New
camera angles. Yeah, it was quite, the direction was pretty decent. I didn't say that, yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree with you as well, Matt. I think I mentioned it as well, that it was nice not to have it all about Gwen.
Because
it does seem like it does kind of circle back to, which is understandable to a degree. She is the star, one of.
Mm. Just to let you know, in reference to that Bad Wolf graffiti as well, it says on Wiki, I've just noticed this, it says, as Josh, as Tosh and Jack descend the stairs in the hall, the graffiti on the wall behind them says Bad Wolf. So I'll have to look out for that. Must be when it's in all run down. So yeah, whenever you see them going down the stairs, just have a look, see if you can spot it.
Ah, that's cool then. So that does tie them into that period, I suppose, Ninth Doctor. Yeah. Good. Thank you very much, guys, for your audio clips. Very much appreciated, as always. Over on the Twitter, we had Jordan Shortman, one of our writers, said, I really like this episode a lot. Billis is a great, if mysterious, villain. Should have been used more in the show, but for the first time, the whole cast put in great performances, particularly Barrowman and Maury as Jack and Tosh. Perhaps Torchwood's best episode from Series 1.
Mm.
Connor McHale says, I really like this ep a lot, adds to the mystery of who Jack is, and it has the brilliant Millis Manger. Chris C. Parry 90 says, I really enjoy the World War II setting of this story and how the story explores the setting that that's in. It looks authentic and makes you feel like you're in that era. Really good insight into Jack's past, and also a great spotlight on Tosh too. A 9 out of 10.
Yeah.
Let's have a look. Who else? Sarah Baggett, to the running Whovian.
Says, hi, Sarah.
A wonderful episode, full of intrigue and suspense with the mysterious Billis Manger and the team's efforts to reopen the rift. Good to finally get some background knowledge on Captain Jack. And wasn't their goodbye scene just a thing of beauty? Also liking the nod to Vote Saxon, a 10 out of 10.
10.
A nice. 10. Yeah, nice one, Sarah. Jack at Houvenir says, incredible. It has Billis, so that automatically makes it amazing. And then the focus on Jack and the aftermath of Owen's relationship works perfectly. A 9 out of 10.
Nice.
Craig Bryce says, possibly my favourite episode of Series 1. I can never decide between this or Ghost Machine. The script is beautifully written, and Billis is an amazing creepy villain, and I love the Vote Saxon poster teasing the third series of Doctor Who. Brilliant. 9 out of 10.
9, yeah.
And I think the last couple here. Caitlin underscore Dalek 100 says, it's a brilliant and beautiful episode. One of season one's best. I liked the small twist of the Americans spotting that Tosh is Japanese. That could have gone into unwanted places. The characters of both the Captain Jacks were absolutely amazing. The World War II setting is great. 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10, wow.
Darren Morrison, Captain Jack at his best. Torch would get stronger from here on in. And
I've heard people say that a few times, actually.
Yes, yeah. Mm. Yep. And over on Facebook, we had just one review over there, which was from Lawrence Baxter. I've always found this a dark and moving episode. The music is great. Jack's love theme has been on my phone's iTunes for years. Jack and Tosh are strong in this episode, whilst Owen and Yando fall apart. Totally unrelenting to the story, but I always like seeing the Vote Saxon posters at the beginning.
Yeah.
8 Captain Jacks out of 10.
Another high score, yeah.
Another high score. So people liking this one. It's really the first time that we've had a collective high score for a Torchwood episode. A lot of
it
them
is,
have been...
It is, actually, yeah.
Yeah, not so much Marmite, but a lot of them have been either middle of the road or, you know, there's a couple of high ones in there, but mostly sort of middle towards the low. So a first time we've had a really good sort of high score average.
Yeah, I was looking back at our scores thinking the same thing, actually. They've been pretty, like you said, middle of the road or whatever. So yeah, it's good to have one a bit higher.
We like it. Yes. Thank you very much, guys, for that. Awesome, as always. Next week, buddy, what we got?
So next week, a 10th Doctor story, and it's called Turn Left. Donna!
Left.
It's the Dr. Donna, isn't it? So Turn Left next week. So that should be good.
Yes. I saw this one recently.
Did you?
It was on TV a couple of months ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I remember it's kind of fresh in my memory, which is good. But obviously I will rewatch it for the review. But yes.
I don't think I've watched it for a while. It's one I've seen a few times, but I haven't watched it recently. So I'll give it a rewatch, obviously.
Yeah. Coolio. So I think we'll wrap there, dude, for 246.
Okay. singing earlier if we had a popcorn version of Doctor Who.
thank you very much. Thank you so much for sticking with us and listening to episode 246. We're very much hyped for the Terence Dix book that's going to be out next year. So make sure you keep an eye on the BBC Books Twitter account this Monday coming, the 18th. So at DWBBCBooks, that's the Twitter account, not the official Doctor Who one. So make sure you vote for those stories. That's very good. Thank you so much for sending in your thoughts on Captain Jack Harkness. Pretty decent story, this one. Some high scores there. Next week, we're going back to modern Doctor Who and it's Turn Left. So get that watched, as we'll be asking for your thoughts on that one. Until then, head over to the website, www.bigblueboxpodcast.co.uk. All of our shows are there, plus all of our cool articles and reviews from our awesome writing team go up there as well. So check those out. Remember to subscribe to the show on whatever podcast app you listen to. Just do a search for the Big Blue Box Podcast, or there are links from the website. Give us a sub so you don't miss a show when that lands every Friday. And check us out on the socials as well, Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. Just do a search for the Big Blue Box Podcast. You'll find us on there. We chat Doctor Who throughout the week, so get involved and have a chinwag about Doctor Who over there. Also, check out my co-host, Adam, the Geek's Handbag.
Geek's Handbag, yeah. Go find me on YouTube and Insta and Twitter. I'm all over it.
All over the bleeding place. just go over to YouTube. And again, there's a link on the website, or just do a search. The Geek's Handbag. Loads of cool videos from Adam over there. Reviews, unboxings, loads of stuff. Yeah. Make a cup of tea. You'll be on there for a couple of hours. It's very cool. And Adam's also on all the socials under the same name, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Again, talking Doctor Who and other geek stuff throughout the week, so get involved over there. Until next week for episode 247, my name's Gary.
My name is Adam.
And remember,